Hello, everyone, and welcome to Employment Matters, a podcast brought to you by the Employment Law Alliance, the world's largest network of labor and employment lawyers from the best law firms around the globe. I'm your host, Tara Stingley, a partner with Klein Williams in Omaha, Nebraska. On the program, we span the globe with updates on critical issues from ELA members in each region. Joining us on the program today is Hugh Williams, a partner with Hirschfeld Kramer in San Francisco, California. Hugh, it's so great to see you. Thanks for joining us on the program.
It's so great to see you too, Tara. I love that we can sit here and do this and talk to our clients together today.
Me too. So, Hugh, there have been and continue to be a lot of developments with regard to reproductive rights, including employee leave as it relates to reproductive loss. And California has really been on the forefront of this issue with its new law addressing job protected leave for employees. So we're hoping that you can break this all down for us. And let's start here with what does the new law require under California law?
Well, as of January 2024, the new law requires a minimum of 5 unpaid days off for each reproductive loss event. So that means an employee can also take a maximum of 20 days off in a 12-month period if, unfortunately, they have more than one reproductive loss in that 12-month period. What's important to remember is that those 5 days of unpaid reproductive loss leave days, they can be non-consecutive. And so this new productive loss leave applies to all employers with 5 or more employees.
And with a lot of employees working remotely for employers, particularly since the pandemic, what if I'm an employer in another jurisdiction with only one employee who is physically located in California? Is that employer still covered by this new law?
That's a great follow-up question, Tara. So actually, no. You would have to have at least 5 employees in California for this leave to apply. Obviously, an employer could be generous and offer this employee to an employee in California, even if they don't meet the 5 employee threshold for employees in California. But an employer only needs to comply with this new reproductive loss leave if they have at least 5 employees located in California.
Thanks, Hugh. Now, can you walk us through who's eligible to take this leave?
Absolutely. So employees are eligible for the reproductive loss leave if they've been working for the employer at least 30 days prior to the leave's commencement and they suffer a qualifying event. So they have to have a loss. And if they were working for the employer for at least 30 days before that loss, then they would be eligible for this leave. And any employee who's eligible is going to be an employee who would have become a parent, but for the loss event. So they could be male or female. They could be the prospective adoptive parent. So anyone who would have become a parent, but for this loss.
And I imagine there are a lot of conditions built into this new law with regard to defining what is a qualifying event that then allows an employee to take this type of leave. How does the new law define a qualifying event?
So under the law, a qualifying event is one of the following. Could be a failed adoption, whether it's the dissolution or breach of an adoption agreement where the adoption wasn't finalized. Could be a failed surrogacy, again, for the same reasons. There was an agreement for a surrogacy and it didn't happen. Or if there was a failed embryo transfer for the surrogate mother, could also be a miscarriage, which is what I think most people think of when they think of reproductive loss, could be a stillbirth. And there also could be, and this is interesting with where we are today in our world, is an unsuccessful assisted reproduction. So that means if somebody's going through IVF, if they're going through IUI, again, any sort of artificial insemination of an embryo or an embryo transfer, et cetera, or an embryo donation, any of that would fall under a qualifying reproductive loss event.
And are there, with regard to this category of leave, are there other persons that this event would apply to beyond what we've already discussed?
Yep. So again, just to be clear, it would apply to a person, the person's current spouse, their domestic partner, or any other individual if that person would have been the parent of the child born as a result of the pregnancy.
And it seems too often that reproductive losses are suffered in silence. What kind of notice is required from employees under this new law in order to take this leave?
So there doesn't actually, unfortunately, have to be any notice, which I know is frustrating for the employer. But from the employee's perspective, again, sometimes these losses are sudden and unplanned for. So there's no notice that the employee has to give. They merely have to request the leave and state that it would fall under the reproductive loss leave and that they suffered a qualifying event.
And if an employee suffers a reproductive loss, are there specific timeframes when they can take this leave?
Generally, a reproductive loss leave must be taken within 3 months of the reproductive loss event. If an employee is on or chooses to go on other leaves available under California's law, such as California's Pregnancy Disability Law, California Family Rights Act, which is the state counterpart to the Family Medical Leave Act, or any other leave provided by state or federal law, then the employee can use their own state law provided leave or federal law provided leave, and then also do a reproductive loss leave within 3 months of that leave ending. So I know that's a mouthful. So for example, if an employee suffered a reproductive loss event but chose to use CIFRA leave, which again is the California leave counterpart to FMLA leave, they could use their CIFRA leave first. Let's exhaust all of that leave, and then they could add on reproductive loss leave within 3 months of their CIFRA leave ending.
Is this new leave that's provided for under California's reproductive loss statute, is the leave paid or unpaid?
It's completely unpaid, but employees can use existing accrued vacation. They can use some sort of personal leave if the employer offers. They can use any of their accrued and available paid sick leave or compensatory time off, whatever is available to them to supplement this wage loss. There's no carryover for the unpaid leave available under reproductive loss as well. You don't accrue it like you would normally paid sick leave. You just get the maximum of 20 days per year if you have multiple losses. But again, if you don't use those reproductive loss leave days, they don't carry over to the following year.
And Hugh, what can employers do under this new law?
So unlike bereavement leave, employers cannot and may not request documentation to certify reproductive loss leave. Again, I know that might be frustrating to employers who want to make sure employees aren't taking advantage of this issue or this protected right to leave. But if an employee comes to you and says, I, again, need time off because I've suffered a reproductive loss leave, an employer may not request documentation such as a doctor's note. And then employers must also maintain the confidentiality of an employee requesting the reproductive loss leave. So any information that an employee provides to you, the employer, about this leave should be taken at face value and should not be shared with anyone else unless required in your system. So like an HR professional would be fine. But again, this information shouldn't be shared with a supervisor or a colleague.
So Hugh, there are a lot of requirements under this new law and a lot of potential areas for misstep. And you and I as employment lawyers are about managing risk for our clients. And as you're looking at this relatively new law that just went into effect in January, what are your thoughts on the biggest areas of risk or potential missteps by employers in applying this leave for their employees?
That's a great question, Tara. And as I would say with any employer who has an employee in California, they should make sure that they've got the appropriate policies in place. So looking at your handbook and putting this policy in there. And then the biggest area for misstep would be questioning the employee's right to the leave. So if an employee were to come to you and ask you for the leave, I think you should consult with legal counsel. It doesn't have to be me, but it should be some legal counsel. Just make sure you're following the leave and you're not doing some sort of misstep. Again, asking for a doctor's note would be a big no-no under this one. So I think that is what we're used to when an employee comes to you and asks for some sort of medical leave. Usually the employer says, okay, great, bring me a doctor's note. And here you actually aren't allowed to ask for the doctor's note. I think that's the biggest area for misstep here.
Well, Hugh, we really appreciate you keeping us in line. And this has been a really fascinating discussion on a very sensitive and, of course, timely issue. Thank you so much for your time and walking us through these issues today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. If you'd like to connect with Hugh, please click on her bio in the description of this podcast. We also encourage you to reach out to any of our lawyers around the world by selecting Find a Lawyer on the ELA website at ela.law. In addition, search the ELA website where you can sign up to receive invitations to our upcoming webinars, download white papers and on-demand content from our online library, or access the ELA's exclusive Global Employer Handbook. You've been listening to Employment Matters, a podcast brought to you by the Employment Law Alliance, the world's largest network of labor and employment lawyers from the best law firms around the globe. I'm Tara Stingley, and thanks so much for listening.